I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Dr. Tom and the Gold-Blooded King. I am the Gold-Blooded King, Daniel Hardy, along with Dr. Tom, Thomas Bevilacqua. How are you doing today, good doctor?
I'm doing good, better than the Warriors were doing last night or basically this entire season. But, you know, I'm not suffering any major injuries, so I guess that distinguishes me from most of the Warriors.
I guess you can't count a broken heart,
They can't put that on the injury report.
And we have a very, very special guest, the guy who keeps GSOM running day after day. You might have seen his name on such posts as Chris Boucher leaves Warriors, many other summer league related things. No, actually, the man himself. We got Brady Klopfer. Give it up for Brady. How are you doing, good sir?
I'm not doing great, man, to be honest, because Jacob Evans III hasn't played in a few weeks, and I'm just not sure where my content is supposed to come from, if not from Jacob Evans.
That is your meal ticket.
It is,
absolutely. I do feel like once all the players got hurt, it was harder for you to just grab, little tidbits.
Yeah, I need them to be like updating the injury report on a daily basis so that I can just have like three posts a day being like Jacob Evans III will still be reevaluated in 2 weeks.
But the people need it, and we give the people what they want.
That we do.
First question today, I'm going to give it to our guest Brady. With the Warriors struggling as they've been for the season, I think they have the worst record in basketball right now, which is amazing because the New York Knicks still exists, which is,
those savants, the New York Knicks, are going to pull off the coup of the century. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Sorry, I digress.
Don't want to trade for Anthony Fake Davis because they're long-term prospects. But I guess my question is, knowing that you do have two nuclear weapons in the Splash Bros, Steph and Clay, recuperating from injuries on the bench, and there is a lot of interesting developments happening with our young prospects, especially Eric Paschal. Can you think of five NBA teams with a brighter future right now than the Golden State Warriors?
Whew. I think that depends on what time frame you're looking at. Because I think if you're looking at, maybe like a 5 to 10 year window, then some of these teams that have the younger cores maybe are a little bit more enticing. But if you're
thinking December, actually, next month.
Next month. In that case, I could think of like 29 teams with more exciting cores.
Never mind. Let's go back to the longer time span.
Because, I think you're onto something with like, if you're looking at like 2-3 years, realistically, if Eric Paschal continues on this route that he's going on, and if the Warriors see, some improvement, like all jokes aside, Jacob Evans III looked really good in those few games before he got injured. He looked decent in preseason. If they see something out of, a Jordan Poole or an Alan Smilagic when he is healthy, and then, like you said, you're bringing in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, which is still arguably the best, two-man combination in the league. You've got Draymond Green, who we know is still an exceptional player when he is on a team that he is motivated to play hard on. And you either have D'Angelo Russell or you have something that you've traded D'Angelo Russell for. I think you could make the case that they should be considered one of the top two title favorites for next year. And that's before we get into the fact that they're likely going to have like a top five draft pick. And that could potentially be huge. So if we're talking in kind of the immediate future, not the immediate as in December, but immediate as in next season and the season after that, yeah, I think they do have one of the top five brightest cores and foundations. And the question is, can they bring that on further than the next 2 or 3 years? And can they open up that window for another, you know, 5 or 10 years like the Spurs always managed to do.
So you're basically saying next year, heavy title favorite, even going to the next couple years with the youth movement underneath. But I guess I have to ask Dr. Tom, why does it feel so terrible right now?
Well, one, it's never fun to watch a team that loses, especially as we've gotten so accustomed to success. But I also think as I was, listening to that response, it's because I was thinking about, well, what other teams would you put, you know, are in the conversation? I was going through and so many, I mean, the best team in the league right now or one of the best, you know, in terms of talent, the Clippers, we don't know who's got, you know, how long will Kawhi be there? How long will Paul George be there? The Lakers, you know, Anthony Davis, they're already saying, well, would he listen to offers from Chicago? So I think what, in addition to the, it's just never fun to, you know, despite our history of watching terrible losing teams, it's after you get a little taste of success, it's never fun to watch it. I also think that sort of long-term thinking, it kind of doesn't exist in the NBA anymore because you have player movement, you have the, you know, things are always so fluid that, you know, a core can be reshaped in sort of a moment's notice. And so I think that that's why, because it's like nobody can, it's just what's in front of you. Like how much, like thinking about the Clippers or the Lakers this year, it's just like, they clearly are just like, let's just win a title this year. Let's just stock up. And then you don't know what's going to happen. You just try, you make it work however you can, but there isn't that, you know, we talking about dynasties and things like that. There isn't that dynastic thinking in terms of how people watch the game. And so I think that sort of contributes to why this season has been just especially rough at the beginning.
Do you think that Steve Kerr is performing up to a coaching level that you're satisfied with, or do you feel like there's something that's to be desired? Obviously, with the roster turnover and the injuries, you know, when you look at the ingredients he has, it's gonna be hard to make a, you know, 5-course meal. But at the same time, we've seen a ton of feedback in our comments and also in the Twitter sphere, kind of calling for Steve Kerr's head, you know, a couple weeks into the season. I'll swing this back to Brady. Do you feel like that's warranted?
I don't. I think had they continued to do what they did the first few games of the season, it might have been warranted because that team was horrible before Steph Curry got hurt. I think they would have figured a lot of things out. You know, a lot of the people who had them pegged for the playoffs were ready to reverse that pick after like 3 games, which I thought was pretty hasty, especially considering the turnover they had and the fact that Curry and Russell are just going to have to take some time to get acclimated with one another. But they were absolutely horrible in those games. And if that had continued, then yeah, I think Steve Kerr would have deserved a lot of blame because as lacking in depth as this team is, if you have Steph Curry, D'Angelo Russell, and Draymond Green, you should at least be a competent basketball team. And if they were not able to do that once the sample size was larger, then I think he deserves blame. But when you look at the roster they have now, not only should they not be winning games, but they're not incentivized to win games. There's no reason for them to really have that be their biggest priority. And I don't think they're tanking.
Piss off some commenters today.
Yeah, absolutely I am. But like, it's worth noting this team is already 2-10. Right, they've already lost more games than the 2015-16 team did.
Oh, how dare you do that to me? How dare you break my heart like this? Oh.
Sorry. But like
so you're saying they're going to win 72, you know, they're going to go 70-0 the rest of the way.
Exactly.
Try the Bulls. Got it.
You can write that down. We'll make a pinned tweet. but I guess my point is right now, I think in coaching, you're in the NBA, a coach's job is very fluid. It changes year to year and even month to month or game to game. And I think that's why it's hard, as we've all discussed before, it's hard to rank coaches because every situation calls for something different. Some coaches, like Steve Kerr, has proven to be a genius when it comes to managing superstar players and getting them all to mesh together and do things well. And other coaches are great at winning games with limited talent, but they're not good at turning a good team into a great team. And so right now, Steve Kerr's job, with this season pretty much out the window already, his job is to develop the young players, put a system in place and see how well people fit it. And that's what we should be judging him on. The two wins, the 10 losses, none of that matters for this team. What matters is how good can Eric Paschal be? How good can Jordan Poole be? Does D'Angelo Russell fit the system? Can they find a system that does work for D'Angelo Russell? How good can Alan Smilagic be? How good can Kevon Looney be? Those are the questions that actually matter. And I don't have an answer really for how good Steve Kerr has been, because I don't think we're really going to see that until maybe next year, when you see how everything he did this year laying the foundation plays out next year on a team that actually has legitimate playoff and championship aspirations. But I think he deserves some of the credit for how good Paschal has been. And to me, that's way more important than if they were 4-8 instead of 2-10, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point. Although I would have saved some more money that I lost during betting.
if you have a gambling problem, please
dial the number below.
Now, Dr. Tom, he named a couple of new players there. D'Angelo Russell, that was a guy when Kevin Durant got traded. I remember, even though you were upset about KD obviously leaving, and it wasn't like we traded KD, you know, because we wanted to, but it was kind of like, you know, the salvage deal. We get D'Lo back. I remember you saying, hey, guys, this is a pretty crucial pickup considering we could have got nothing back. And I remember a lot of folks in the, you know, the GSOM Slack channel were a little concerned, like, is this the guy that's going to fit our system? You know, he's kind of a pick and roll heavy kind of guy. Needs the ball in his hands. How's it going to work? Now that you've seen him, you know, in the game that he's been healthy, especially when Steph was gone, what's your perception of D'Lo now?
I mean, it is about the same. I do. It was clear from the beginning that maybe Kerr hadn't compensated for how much, whether it's how much Russell was going to need the ball in his hands, how much he was going to have to go away from his offense to kind of allow him to thrive. But he's looked good. He's been, you know, we're spending, and rightfully so. I think Paschal gets the, you know, as what everybody's sort of fixating on is like the lone bright spot in this early part to the season. But I think Russell's play, I mean, you look at over these past few games and he's, you know, been keeping them in the game. He's had them, been almost willing them single-handedly to get wins. Now, obviously they haven't, but I think that has more to do with, well, you have the Warriors are hard capped and they have an extremely sort of flawed in a lot of ways bench and supporting cast. But I think, you know, I don't know. I've been impressed with Russell so far. I don't, you know, you have to wait and see. You have to have Steph Blatt back and Clay back to see, does he fit in on this team? I think he could. And I wonder if having this responsibility and the sort of the having to take the lead of this team is going to allow him to better fit in once you have all of those guys back. So you have to wait and see. But I don't know. He's been impressive, you know, with he's going out there, you know, that you know, he's going out there and teams know he's the offense. He's the one guy who can get a bucket. And he's still, you know, up until that Laker game where they were really just like, we're just going to stop this guy and whoever else can do whatever they want. But he was still able to kind of get going. And that's, you know, he's not a perfect player. He's not, you know, in that sort of upper level of the sort of the elite talent in the NBA. But I think he's shown, look, this is a guy who as a second or third option could be someone on a team that has playoff and championship aspirations. So I think you have to wait and see. We just don't know. But I think people who are trying to kick D'Lo out the door, trying to really kind of bring him down a little bit and denigrate him, I think are kind of missing the point. I think he's really impressed that he could, you know, this is a frustration. You know, he was on a playoff team last year. He could be very frustrated with this, but he doesn't seem to be. He seems to be someone who is trying hard and trying to help this team develop. And I think that's also something that can't be overlooked. So I think you got to go wait and see. And I think Russell, you know, it's a little bit of a throwback to that, you know, dare I say like a Monte Ellis or a whomever, of just like guys who can kind of ball and get buckets on teams that don't usually win. But I think there's more there. We just have to wait and see how much more there is.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Monte Ellis, because that's a fascinating comparison just in terms of the idea of an undermanned, scrappy team that's just not going to roll over. And that's the one thing I really appreciate about this Warriors team, is that despite their disadvantages, they're not quitting. And they're, you know, we've seen them come back from 20 down and at least cut to, you know, single digits in the last minute or so. And that's really impressive. That's one of the things that we loved about Monte Ellis, was that, you know, he was going against the Kobe's and the D-Waves and the LeBrons, and he was coming at their necks like, hey, you're going to come into, you know, Oracle Arena and disrespect the squad. Well, so I always love about Monte as well.
And I wonder if, you know, it's in terms of the size, they don't quite line up. But I wonder if the guy who maybe compares it, I'm thinking about it, Antoine Jameson, because I'm just thinking about those back-to-back 50-point nights. And I do, because I do think you can be a player who scores a lot, but you don't help your team. But I look at Antoine during those years, and I don't like it was the supporting cast. It was what was around him, and it was just him laying it all out there to try to single-handedly get a team a win, and hopefully someone would come along for the ride. So maybe Ellis, even though their size-wise kind of match up and kind of the way where they are on the court, but maybe it's even more of that like an Antoine Jameson, because I don't want it to seem like, oh, if he's just going out there and getting his buckets, that's hurting the team in some way. And I think Ellis, it maybe he invited a little bit of that criticism.
Well, yeah, he did. But at the same time, there was definitely some nights where it was like, no one can get a bucket. And you look at that depth chart and you're like, who can get a bucket? And Monte's like, I can. So, you know, I appreciate it. And especially, you know, I've been a couple games this year in Chase, and the sequence that usually happens is this. The Warriors try to run their motion offense. It's like three turnovers, two Jordan Poole air balls, and like a missed layup from Glenn Robinson III. And then D'Angelo's like, okay, guys, I got it. And then he just goes bonkers for like a 5-minute stretch. And you're like, whoa, this dude literally is the biggest reason to look with my eyeballs at the court, as opposed to just crying and gnashing my teeth. So I really appreciate that from a, you know, entertainment fan perspective. But at the same time, it's so hard to get buckets that way. I mean, if you're not James Harden, you know what I mean? And even then, we see that there are some nights where it looks just terrible.
In the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, when it counts the most. Just running those high pick and rolls and trying to, you know, I mean, obviously D'Lo's vision probably isn't the best, but he's trying to move the ball when he can see. But I think oftentimes, so many times, he's like, the team needs me. Got to put him on my back. Let me just work it out. And sometimes he may miss a guy, and sometimes he may find the guy and he misses the shot. And it's like, well, D'Lo, you should have shot that contested jumper from 30 feet. So it's a almost a lose-lose spot for him if we're looking at him in terms of like wins and losses. But in terms of like keeping the fans entertained and giving the Warriors a fighting chance, I'm all about D'Lo right now. It's funny enough, though, I feel like there's a situation going on around in the league where in the absence of the Warriors dynasty just crushing everyone down, the resurgence of the individual player who, you know, takes everyone's heart, like the Dames and the Kyries and the Andrew Wiggins, guys like that, Brady. when you have a D'Lo and you're thinking about the trade market possibly, who out there are you thinking like, I wouldn't trade D'Lo for? Like, would you trade D'Lo for Kyrie? Would you trade him for Wiggins? Would you trade him for Dame?
Oh, well, that's such a hard question because it's easy in a vacuum where you're just talking about kind of talent for talent, but then you have to consider like fit and actually what the Warriors have and what the Warriors need. And like, right. It's kind of a weird fit having D'Angelo Russell next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but at least like you can kind of see how it works. He's pretty big for a point guard, so he can kind of pass as a two guard defensively, even though he's not a very good defender. So like, I think Kyrie Irving and Damian Lillard are substantially better players than D'Angelo right. Russell, but the fit might be a little bit harder. And they're also guys who are used to being the star of their team, super, super ball dominant. And while Russell is used to being ball dominant, he actively chose to sign with the Warriors knowing that they had Steph Curry. So like mm-hmm. he came into this knowing, hey, this is going to be my role. I'm not always going to be the guy bringing the ball up the court. And, you know, who knows if a Damian Lillard or a Kyrie Irving would be willing to do that. That said, I would, you know, 8 days a week trade him for Damian Lillard without thinking twice. You do that and ask questions later. Absolutely would not trade him for Andrew Wiggins. absolutely would not do that. I know I'm a, for anyone listening, I am the lone person in our boisterous Slack conversation who is not yet convinced that Andrew Wiggins has figured things out. I need a little bit more before I get there. And that contract is just, whoo, mama, that's a big contract. I mean, it's basically the same contract as D'Angelo Russell's at this point with the amount of time left on it and the money. But I think honestly, if we're going to see D'Angelo Russell traded, I don't think it's going to be this year. I think it's much more likely to come in a situation where they use him to get a... Well, I think ideally they're hoping that there will be a disgruntled star, that there will be a Paul George situation from his indie days or an Anthony Davis situation from this last summer where a superstar like a Giannis or an Embiid or a Ben Simmons is on the market saying that they're not going to re-sign and that team is stuck needing to get back some value. But if that doesn't happen, I would be curious to see if the team does go the route of just trading him for complimentary pieces for those Andre Iguodala type players. Like, you know, we know that Minnesota has a huge interest in D'Angelo. I don't think the Warriors would be interested in Wiggins, but would they be interested in something like Robert Covington, Josh Okogie, and some draft picks where you're getting two solid, dependable role players that you put around your core of three star players and maybe some younger players to try to expand the window. I don't know if they would be, I don't know if Joe Lacob would be down with trading a guy with an all-star on his resume who's as young as D'Angelo Russell is for role players. I don't think that is what they had in mind when they signed him. But I'd be curious to see if they did. I just took your question. I just went in a completely different direction than what you were asking. I apologize for that.
It's all good.
So wait, if the Warriors trade for Ben Simmons, do they do what should be done and turn him into a center?
Man, you know, that's a really good question. I think they would still start a center, but I think we would see a lot of lineups where Simmons and Draymond are the four and the five in one order or the other.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting. I'd be down for that.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been kind of, this is the weird hill I've put myself on, but it's a way of saying, well, you could find maybe someone to put at the three because you look at, and I know he's a little undersized, but Alec Burks has been playing well, thus far this season. And so you think about, well, you take a guy like that and you say, okay, he's your three. Cause I for some reason, my mind always goes to, yeah, like you picking up that guy with the Russell contract. But yeah, maybe you somehow Jedi mind trick Ben Simmons, be like, no, you are a center. And then you roll the dice on a guy like Burks or someone like that. And you're just like, okay, you're the five, but you don't have to do that much. Don't worry. You're just going to get a lot of glory playing alongside these guys.
Right. Well, I think it's fascinating that the guys you're mentioning, like, you know, Ben Simmons, you know, all-star, future megastar, they say, and you're saying, you know, you can put D'Lo's name in that hat for a trade. I think that's pretty awesome that D'Lo's that much of a prospect. And in a perfect world, I would love for the Warriors to have, you know, three guards who can go and get you 50 to any time. But there has been some defensive issues, obviously. And I guess the question is, with the young guys the Warriors have now, who do you see transforming into a standout defender right now?
Oh, that's a hard one. I do think Pascal will be a very good defender. I think it's going to take some time. I think just in the league in general, rookies are not good defensive players. They just don't provide value on that end of the court for understandable reasons. I mean, I think people underestimate how different the NBA and college are. And just not just in terms of size and athleticism and physicality, but like defensive and offensive schemes in college are so simple. They are so, you know, not to sound like condescending or anything, but they're so simple compared to what is run in the NBA. You have so many zone defenses, so many, you know, high school level offenses, and it just takes a long time to get used to the offenses that are being run, the defenses that you are expected to run, and then the size and speed of the game. So Pascal, you know, I don't think he's been great yet defensively, but I think we've seen on offense how good he can be defensively, as weird as that sounds. But just his ability, like, he doesn't look like he's going to be that quick. He doesn't look like he's going to have that many.
Tell that to LeBron. He saw him last night.
Exactly. We've seen that every game. I mean, he did that to PJ Tucker repeatedly, just first step, got right by him. He's done that in almost every game. It seems to me like there isn't a player that he has faced yet that he can't get to the rim against at will. And that tells me that he is a really, really, really good athlete. And that, I think, combined with how smart of a player, I think we're going to see that next year and the year after develop into a really strong defensive player. And then also, we haven't seen him yet, but all of the scouting reports on Alan Smilagic suggest that he has all the tools necessary to be a really good defensive center, which would be huge, obviously, for the Warriors. That one might take a while because he is still incredibly young. Obviously hasn't made his debut yet. His body still needs to develop a little bit more. He needs to grow into his frame a little bit. But you guys were all there with me at Summer League. That guy has outstanding defensive instincts. His timing protecting the rim is great. I think those two, Smilagic and Pascal, I think they can be very good defensive players.
Yeah, he had a couple blocks at the end of the night that got all of us while we were like falling asleep there. got us on our feet. It's like, oh my god.
He was the reason to keep your eyes open for those Warriors Summer League games.
The other guy who he's not a rookie, but who I thought at least defensively has looked good, what has been Omari Spellman. I remember watching the Rockets game, and I think the game against the Rockets, and maybe one of the ones against the Thunder, where he was someone who I got a little of that Kevon Looney energy, because he would get switched on to guys on the perimeter, and I mean, he wasn't shutting them down 100% of the time, but he was doing a pretty good job for a big switched on to usually a pretty good player, or Chris Paul if it was against the Thunder. thank you. He's someone who, you know, they took that chance on flipping Damian Jones for Spellman, and I, you know, maybe this is just overreaction or just the desperation that comes with watching a team that is not winning, but it's like, oh wow, I think they really made the right move, because I've probably seen more from Spellman that makes me think this is a long-term guy, long-term player than you saw from Damian Jones at all. There was, he had like one or two. I remember he had a game in the end of 2018 against Oklahoma City where Jones played well. But other than that, it had been nothing. And Spellman, it must be noted that not in wins, but he's made some really good contributions on defense. And this is only his second year in the league. So he's young and he's another guy who, especially defensively, and given the way the game is played now with switching, and you need your big men if they want to stay on the court to be able to guard when they get switched on to someone. It's why Ryan Anderson, I don't know where he is, but I'm pretty sure Steph escorted him out of the league in the 2018 Western Conference Finals.
He's in Houston, still not playing.
Oh, he's a Cal guy. He'll land on his feet. But Spellman's the guy that who stood out to me in terms of a young guy with some defensive promise. Because that has been the Achilles heel is putting. It's just like the glaring, enormous, gigantic weakness in this Warriors team. It's just that they are and. Even worse defensively than any of us thought they'd be.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part about watching them is that their defense is so bad, it makes you think that their offense is completely trash. And I was going over the numbers recently, and they're still over 300 passes a game. I think they were like 11th in assists. They're keeping their turnovers down relatively. The offense, while not finished work, is not the problem. And I think that's what's so bizarre about it. The defense is so bad, it makes you feel like, why aren't we shooting 60%? You know what I mean? It's insane. And I like Spellman a lot. He gives me so many most space vibes. It's just ridiculous. Like that. First of all, him and Pascal, their turnaround and mid-range face-up games, like for rookies to be that confident, like staring you down from 18 feet and pulling up in the face and nailing it, that's going to be a weapon down the road. It's going to be huge, especially when you have Steph and Klay rotating off screens. If you can, a play basically where they come off the pin down and Steph and Klay get it, but they're trapped and they dump it down real quick. Remember David West used to drill those mid-range jumpers like all day? Dude, if we get Spellman and Pascal hitting those, like the offense has a new dimension to it.
And what's funny is I look at a lot of what we're taking away from the season so far, Spellman and Pascal and those guys and Burks too, these in smaller roles doing things well and kind of in a surprising way. And it's just like, this is the, like, if you had Stephen Clay there, that's that special sauce that makes teams great. It's when you have like the Warriors had in all these other runs, when it's like David West on that elbow jumper or Leandro Barbosa just coming in and like barreling into the lane. It's that little kind of special sauce of the like, oh, this is kind of this unexpected player who can just give you something special. Mo Spates is another example of that. And so it's like, I just wish we had the real team here to play with some of these guys, because I think that they've shown, they're pretty good. And then if you put them with the actual core and, the best backcourt in the league, that'll be wins. It won't just be nice performances that Warrior fans talk about, oh, okay, the potential of it. Like we're talking about Anthony Randolph or whomever.
Speaking of potential, I know it's super early. Just give me your hot take right now. Jordan Poole, splash nephew or not?
Oh, you're trying to bait us here, Daniel.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Trying to get us to say something real bad. man, I just don't have an answer for that, honestly. Like, here's what I love that he's still shooting. I know it's pissing a lot of Warriors fans off that he is just chucking and chucking and chucking, but that's his game. That's like, with all due respect to him, I think he might be able to develop a few things. He's shown a few, like, there have been a few possessions where he's shown some really interesting things defensively, and there have been a few possessions where he has beaten a man off the dribble and made a pass that I had no idea that was in his toolkit. So like, there are glimpses here and there that he can do other things, but he was drafted to catch the ball and shoot the ball and catch the ball and shoot the ball. And as long as he is on the floor, as long as Steve Kerr is putting him out there, his role is to shoot and shoot and shoot. So like, I'm glad that he hasn't abandon that he hasn't been trigger shy, even as some fans are maybe turning on him and saying, you know, stop shooting so much. Because like, if you want him to stop shooting, put him on the bench. Like, right. But if he's on the floor, you got to play your role, and that's his role, even if he's not playing it particularly well right now. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be the level of shooter that Clay or Steph is. He doesn't have that resume in college that Clay and Steph had.
Oh, greatest shooter of all time.
Greatest, yeah. I mean, it's a high bar. Those are, in my opinion, the two best shooters that have ever played. So like, you know, it's fine if he's not at that level. If he only makes it to be like prime Nick Young, that's still a great addition to a team. Prime Nick Young, not Warriors Nick Young.
Okay.
Prime Nick Young.
Champion Nick Young?
How much cinnamon has he ingested? That's the important question.
Well, yeah, he's still got to do that if he wants to be a swag champ.
He's got to find his JaVale.
He's got to find his JaVale. Indeed, indeed. But you know, his mechanics are exceptional, exceptional mechanics, and his release is so quick. And he's really bought in so far to the Warriors' offense in terms of being kind of relentless off the ball, working around screens. You see that a lot with rookies who are shooters in college, and then they come out and like, they're asked to run around like two stagger screens and they don't get the ball and they like start slumping their shoulders and hanging their head like, why didn't you pass to me? You know, crap like that. And I've been impressed that he has taken to Clay and Steph in that kind of relentlessness off the ball, doesn't care if the play doesn't actually end up in his hands, runs it again, just keeps moving until he's open and then shoots it. So, you know, I think he has the potential to be like a mini Splash Nephew
or something. What I noticed from him is that, and of course he's a baby in the game, you know, he's a rookie, but there's totally a sense of, he's so dedicated to, you know, making his cuts. He'll be wide open, but he's rushing because he's anticipating someone being there. So he'll rush the shot. It's like, well, bro, you had a little split second there to take your time and get set. And there's other times where he's like feeling comfortable and someone just runs up and snatches the ball from him or blocks the shot. And he's like, whoa, where'd you come from? So I think once he starts figuring out the pace of the game and knowing, I mean, think about that. Steph and Clay, they're so aware where the defender is. You rarely ever see them ever get blocked, like ever. Like they're so aware. But that's, you know, years into the game. So if Poole gets that down, I think it'll be fine. But it is kind of tough, you know, like, the team's making a run and we cut the lead to 7 and it's like, here comes Poole off the pin down and he's wide open and his feet aren't set and he's fading away from 30 feet. And you're like, oh no, buddy. Just set those feet, baby.
Yep. Yep. He's fun though. I do enjoy watching him, even as infuriating as he is. He's fun.
He's the kind of epitome of the season, like for the team is kind of what I want to see from Poole, which is just, you know, if you're missing those shots, despite, kind of the example you had there, Daniel, it's like, I want you to learn the system and just shoot, because you know, eventually they have to start falling, or they will, because you are, or have a, you know, you don't just, I mean, maybe you do just forget how to shoot. I don't know. You know, I think you just got to give them time, and especially getting adjusted to the pace and the spacing and the nature of the pro game. Like, yeah, it's this, we've played 12 games in the NBA. Like, I'm sure.
Trade him.
I'm sure there have been other rookies who have struggled in their first 12 games, shooting from three point range and have managed to rebound. I mean, look at Ben Simmons, although he hasn't actually made a 3-pointer yet.
Look at Ben Simmons. Remember how Clay goes to a slump every single year?
Yeah. Well,
like I know every time it happens, like, you know, it's game three and he's like 1-for-20, and you go to the comments and people are like, look, I think we need to trade Clay Thompson. The magic is gone. And it's like, whoa, this dude's like, you know, better than Reggie Miller.
It's like Space Jam isn't real. You can't just take away talent. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to break it to everyone. That was not, in fact, a documentary. So usually,
what?
Yeah, I know. I it's tough. Sometimes you gotta, you gotta bring the truth. But the numbers regret. Like, you will. You say regress. I always love pointing this out, but like that works both ways. So like if you're low and then high, it's still a regression back to the mean. But I think you will see that from Poole at some point, both this season and then kind of overall, you'll see him be more what the Warriors envision as he gets more playing time. He's getting plenty of playing time. I mean, just being in the league more again. He's played it 12 games in the NBA. Just yet, like, when I move to some place in like my first 12 days there, like, I'm just a mess. So like, let's give the guy a little time and before we start saying anything.
Oh, totally. And speaking of time, I want to shift gears to go to a Western Conference team that I actually picked to make the playoffs. I think a lot of folks did.
The Warriors?
The Portland Trail Blazers. the Blazers are 4-8, and they happen to be one of the two teams we beat. The Pelicans were 2-8, and now the Blazers 4-8 are two victories. I don't know how much Portland basketball you guys have watched this year. I watched a couple games. They suck. What happened?
Yes. They do suck. They are in a world of trouble. So Hassan Whiteside is really bad.
Oh.
He is just really bad. And Yusuf Nurkic, who is injured and is the reason they're playing Hassan Whiteside, is really good. And I think people kind of forgot how good he was because Portland still managed to do well in the playoffs for two rounds before you know what happened there. But
and then they did good for the first half of all those games.
Yeah,
and then suddenly it was like, whoops. I thought Dame time. I thought his time was later in the game. I guess we're mistaken.
they
activate the brooms.
They get some serious participation trophies for that series, no doubt. They showed out, you know, for a sweep. you know, congrats to them. Yeah. That's kind of the most they've had to cheer for in a while. But man, their offseason was so bad, in my opinion. I mean, of all the centers to target, I know they were trying to do something to make up for Nurkic being injured, but Whiteside that just wasn't it, in my opinion. And they had to give up Mo Harkless and
Myers Leonard. How could you be Mo
Harkless? Myers Leonard, the man himself.
I'm simultaneously thinking of Tom making a Kanye joke and Myers Leonard scoring 20 points against the Warriors in one quarter or one half.
Myers Leonard! How could you be Mo Harkless?
I'm going to have to listen to 808s and Heartbreak as soon as we're done with this.
Well, I mean, that's what was so crazy about it to me is that, you know, as bad as the Warriors are, only one team can win the championship while the Warriors are down right now. And we know they won't be down forever. In fact, Brady called them one of the heavy title favorites for next year. So that means that every team with, like, you know, the chutzpah and the revenge factor, and it's our year. I mean, Lakers, Rockets, Jazz, Nuggets, Clippers, Mavericks. I mean, Spurs, what are you going to name in there? only one team can win it. And so to see the way that it's shaken out early after, like, you know, 10 or 11 or so games or so, I think it's fascinating to see that so many teams have such glaring flaws. Now, of course, with the Clippers, we have to wait to see how PG-13 comes back, because if it's seamless, good night, curtains. But the Lakers have some serious flaws, but even though they're 9-2. Rockets, 8-3, but do you trust them?
No.
The Jazz, obviously, Dr. Tom and I do not trust them at all, although Brady would beg to differ. But it's amazing to me that all these teams that complained about, like, if only the Warriors weren't here, we could really shine. I can't wait to see how it shakes out, because a lot of people's legacies, if they don't win this year, are going to be irreparably damaged. Like, if James Harden doesn't win a title this year, he's not going to win it ever. Like, that's for sure. If LeBron can't get it this year at his age, unless they can add, you know, like some other bargain basement former superstar like Dwight Howard. Says, like, Dwight Howard is getting 15 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 blocks off the bench. People are like, oh, my God, Dwight Howard's back. I was like, Dwight Howard never left. He's been the same guy the whole time. Like, those are his numbers. He's always been getting. What are you talking about?
To my point about numbers regressing, I look at this Dwight Howard run at the beginning of the season, and it's just like, that I don't know how you sustain that for an entire season. Maybe I'm wrong.
You don't think he can sustain getting 15 points and 8 boards against backup power fours?
Yes.
I mean, he's got to be, I mean, outside of Montrezl Harrell, is Dwight Howard the best backup big man in the game?
That feels disrespectful.
Serge Ibaka.
He's a backup?
He is now with Gasol starting.
Oh, okay. You know what? I will definitely give it to Ibaka. Speaking of the Raptors, Pascal Siakam, is he the best player of all time?
he's played like one of the best players in the league right now. We'll see how that holds up, but my God.
Well, but it helped because they finally got that other point guard out of there so they can start giving Fred VanVleet some real run.
Wow.
MVP is killing. Okay, wow. So final question to wrap this up. Who, if we take a look at the Warriors' schedule, who will they get their next win on?
This is depressing.
Oh, yeah, this is – I don't like this question.
Come on, they got to win something.
All right, let's – I gotta look up their schedule here real quick. All right.
Don't forget December 11th against the Knicks, Kevon Looney, Stormtrooper Edition bobblehead night.
Yes.
I only got on November 17th against the Pelicans.
That could be. I'm going to go with that November 19th versus the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
No, hell no. Ja Morant's killing it right now.
Where is Ja?
Tom, you are just quick that boy with your cultural references.
Hey, man, I've seen stuff. I know things.
You know Kanye. You know Dave Chappelle.
I think Pelicans is a good bet. Will Zion be back by then?
No.
No, he's way off still. Way off. Yeah.
I think you're right that either the Pelicans or the Grizzlies, then who
they got the Bulls coming up.
Yeah, the Bulls and they get to take their trip down to Orlando to face the Magic, who I thought would be a lot better and are not.
Yeah. You and all of us, man, they're
maybe that's my fault because I haven't been watching them, but they were definitely a team. It was like, they're going to make the leap, but then it's like, no, they're 3 and whatever.
They made the leap, just not in the direction expecting.
Off the cliff.
Again, more to this comment about regression, it was like last year, it was like, they made the playoffs. Wow. And then it's like, all right, now you got to go back to being who you are.
Oh, totally. I have the upset pick. I think we are going to be the trap game for the Boston Celtics.
Ooh.
I think they're going to sleepwalk on us. I foresee a lot of Jason Tatum. This is the one team that Jason Tatum could actually drop 45 on. Never mind. Let's go with the Pelicans. Let's go with the Pelicans. All right. So we got that Sunday, November 17th. Book it, folks. The Warriors are beating the Pelicans for the third win of the season.
Raise that banner.
Second time in the That's right. I'm going to raise that up.
3-win team, baby.
All right, folks. Thank you for listening to Dr. Tom and, of course, the great Brady. I am the gold-blooded King Daniel Hardy. We'll be back at you soon. And Hey, Brady, in post, add some cool hip-hop music here.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah! All right, good night.